Is it time to trade Carl Anthony Towns? That is probably the biggest decision, I think, Pete, that the Timberwolves have to make this offseason. That is assuming that the GM Connolly stays around, which we all hope that he does, Tim Connolly, because he's done a great job here. But I don't know how you make all of this work, because it's hard. You know, you come off a season where arguably their best season in 20 years. Mm-hmm. And now you have to take – you're done. The season's over after you lose to Dallas in frankly, what was a putrid final game. And that's the only word I had for it. It was just awful. And now you have to take a real hard look at yourself in the mirror and say, what do you do? And I'm thinking about this morning. And full disclosure, I spent the last hour and a half on ESPN's NBA Trade Simulator, like just trying to figure out how does this work. And the only thing I came of it is – I have no earthly idea how you make a trade like this work, but I do think it's my thought and belief that it has to be done this offseason.
You know, it's unfortunate, too, because he's part of our two-man team, right? I think when we really look at who we are as a team, obviously we've got Rudy. We've got a lot of players that are on the outskirts and so forth. Jaden Daniels, great defensive mm-hmm. player. Mike Conley's done a great job, even at whatever age. And you wonder about Alexander Walker, all these other players, right? But it comes down to two players against two players when it was in the series against Dallas. And our two players never even came close. Well, they did in game four. We outshot them. We did a much better yes. job, and we actually got the points that we needed to win that
game. And Naz Reid couldn't miss.
So. And Naz Reid couldn't miss. You're exactly right. But when I look at what happened against Dallas, how about this for a stat? Cat shot 38% against Dallas. Now, that's pretty awful, right? And against Dallas.
Especially since a lot of his shots are in close, although he does shoot threes too.
Right. And when he was shooting threes, he was 24%. Going into that series, he was shooting 50% and 40%, yeah. and he just kept dropping, unfortunately. So does it mean Cat has to go? I know everybody's calling for his head. Everybody wants him to get traded or whatever. He's still a great player, but he did not. Maybe it was a matchup thing. Maybe we're not giving Dallas enough credit for what they were doing defensively against both of them. Because quite honestly, Ant really didn't come on and play like Ant until the last mm-hmm. two games, the game four and game five.
Yeah, I mean, yeah. I think the trade talk comes mostly from the just salary cap, right? They're in the second apron.
It has to be.
It's not that they don't want him. It's how are you going to make use of your money most effectively? And unfortunately, it seems very possible that that means Carl Anthony Towns is not here. However, this is the start of a window. You're not
yes.
if
Thank
you're
you.
Going to trade Carl Anthony Towns, you're not going to trade him for picks. You're going to expect some sort of high-caliber player that can step into a similar role. Maybe not the same exact role. Maybe Naz Reid takes that. But a similar role that's going to take a lot of minutes. And you look around the league, and who can do that? There are not a ton of guys that can do that. I'm just having fun now, Dave, with the simulator myself.
Oh, my gosh.
I just turned it on.
It's addicting.
I like Chris Middleton out of Milwaukee. I think he's a similar type player. I don't know if they'd want him. But, man, it's going to be a complicated offseason to try to figure out both players and salary with this window opening up.
But here's the X factor that bothers me. And I'd love to know what everyone thinks out there. Give us a shout on the stylesfinancial.com talk and text line 651-461-9226. Do you think the Timberwolves should trade Carl Anthony Towns? Here's the X factor here for me, guys. We don't really know who the owner of this team is right now and who the owner of this team is after the summer or whenever they decide plays a monstrous role in what's going to happen. Because I'm not going to try to go through numbers and explain like I understand exactly what all these top floor, bottom floor, third floor, ladies lingerie, whatever it all means. I have no idea. But somewhere between all of that, they are going to have ownership support to pay money. It's going to cost if you want to keep Carl Anthony Towns. Because there is an argument here that this team did great things this year. It was the best season in decades. And to try to break apart that group right after that, it does seem a little short-sighted to me, even though it's going to cost more money. So you have to have ownership's approval to say, okay, we're going to pay extra to the second ceiling or whatever it's going to be because we're going to keep this together. They sold out the Target Center this year. For almost every single game. I mean, they made money this year. The NBA TV contracts are always going to go up. Do they want to put that money in to keep Cat? And because you have Naz Reid, that complicates things. But would Naz Reid be as effective if he was the other guy as opposed to Karl Anthony Towns? You play those guys differently. It's that whole, how's Naz going to be affected if all of a sudden he's doubled on every time he's out there? You know, it's different. Mm-hmm. Do we have a caller, Charlie?
Yeah, we have a caller.
Yeah, let's grab a caller. We got Dan on the line.
All right, let's do it. StylesFinancial.com, talking text line. Good morning, sir, or ma'am.
Dan.
Good morning.
Hi, Dan.
Can you hear me?
Yes, I can. Go ahead, buddy.
So I know that whole tournament at the end there with Dallas was a huge disappointment. But everybody needs to slow their roll with regards to Carl and anybody else. We just came off the best season in this franchise history. We should relish it. We should enjoy it. And we should look for improvements next year. Nobody anticipated what they were going to do this year from based on the year before. And Carl is going to continue to grow. So I know it makes for good talk radio and speculation and all this, but slow your roll, keep them together as much as possible, and we'll enjoy another good year next year. Thanks for listening.
Thank you, Dan. Thank you for telling us to slow our roll.
Yeah, I mean, I agree with Dan 100%. I think I 100% think that he should be back. I think everybody wants him back. It's a money thing. It just is.
It's a money thing.
I think that would be the reason why he's gone. Otherwise, he's back.
Although, I don't know that that's 100% true. I don't know that everybody wants Carl Anthony Towns back. I think there's a lot of folks out there that are calling for, hey, look, we didn't do it. We need to change something. Now, I don't agree with that, by the way. I think we should try to do whatever we can to keep him. He's only 28 years old, guys. I mean, if you keep the band together, we got a shot. I mean, look how we looked great against Phoenix. We did an unbelievable job against the world champions, right? I mean, you know, the NBA champions. So we don't match up well against Kyrie and Luka. All right, we just got to figure that part of it out. And maybe some of it is coaching. Maybe some of it is the players and how we did things, some of the scheming. I don't know. But Carl Anthony Towns is one of the – I think any other team out there is looking at it going, really? You guys don't want Carl? We'll take him. I mean, I think that there's multiple teams out there that would say that. And if they have any room on the salary side of things, they'd scoop him up. And they'd make it work. And I think we have to figure out how do we make it work here. Otherwise, I got to tell you, I love Naz Reid. You guys know that. But is Naz Reid, some guys are better as a sixth man. They really are. Some guys are better coming off the bench for whatever reason. So I think he's right. And I think a lot of people might need to slow their roll.
So let me rephrase the question because we're talking about trading Cat. So if you do trade Cat, do you think Naz Reid would be able to step up? Because you make a good point, Pete. It's that backup quarterback role. It's the Josh Dobbs role, right? Yeah. Like nobody knew Josh Dobbs. All of a sudden he's tearing it up, and then everyone realizes, okay, we can find tape on him, and there's ways to get him. Can Naz Reid be that guy if they trade Cat? Can they still have enough there if Karl Anthony Towns is not part of this equation next year to make the run that they made this year? Or is he that big of a factor?
Right. And is he capable of having those the pressure, number one, the minutes, number two? There's a lot to being a sixth man. I mean, Kevin McHale was one of the best of all time. And there are some players that just play better because of that. So I think it's an interesting thing. By the way, you bring up the aeronautical gentleman, the quarterback. I just saw him this past weekend, Dave. So it was pretty fun.
He's doing just fine, isn't he? I mean, he's
a looked
very
good
rich
in
astronaut.
San Francisco. He looked pretty good for the 49ers, I'll tell you.
I always liked the 2 or 3 weeks that he starred for this team. It was exciting. We will continue. We'll probably chat some more about this later. Again, your calls and texts come to the stylesfinancial.com talk and text line 651-461-9226. What's that, Charlie?
Yeah, I wanted to make sure we let people know it's a bit of a short show today with
NBA 11. Yes, thank you. I can never tell if you're talking to me or if you're talking.
I get in your ear, behind the scenes. See, here. I'm talking in their
ear. I'm still new to
using
this.
Them. It's all good.
Listen, I'm surprised I don't have the radio on next to me and getting the feedback. I'm still new to radio. So thank you, Charlie. Yeah, short show today. We're out at 11 for Inside Twins, so we'll probably touch on this again if we get a chance to. But we have a lot more coming up today, including Taylor Heise, championship, Walter Cup winning Taylor Heise from the Minnesota PWHL franchise. We're going to chat with her coming up next. I want to know what it was like in game four when you throw the gloves and you win, and then all of a sudden they tell you, you didn't win. How do you regroup from that? We'll talk about with Taylor Heise coming up next. You're listening to 830 WCCO. Minnesota's PWHL franchise won the Walter Cup this week. Taylor Heise joins us on the John Schuster Caldwell Banker Hotline. Taylor, thank you for joining us. How much have you slept since winning the championship? Have you gotten a good night's sleep yet?
I think you can kind of tell from my voice right now, not a whole lot.
But I am curious because, go ahead.
No, we've been just having a great time. I think, you know, sleep doesn't matter when you're a winner. That's what someone on my team told me the other day. So.
Taylor, I was at, we were there at game four at the XL Energy Center, the double overtime game.
Yep.
And when I am curious to know the mindset and how difficult it is. How difficult is it to reset? You throw the gloves in the air, the helmets are where you've won it on what was a phenomenal play by you, and that they end up ruling goalie interference. What was your thought on that? What's your thought process to get back together to try to go on and continue playing?
Yeah, it's definitely hard. We did joke as a team now. We are the only team that has won the Walter Cup twice in 1 year. But, you know, it definitely was something that was hard to digest in the moment. I think it was absolutely insane that we had to go pick back up and play right away after. Not to complain about it because we won, but I think that if we would have zammed in between, I truly do think that we would have won that game. I know we really wanted to win for the fans and just being at home, but, you know, after the goal was called off, I didn't even have my own gloves. I was playing with my teammates' gloves. Like, we couldn't find our own gloves. I had my helmet because I had a number on it, but it was definitely a struggle, but I think the mindset in the locker room after the game was, like, I mean, we've done the game five before. They haven't. You know, we've been in this situation, and as much as we didn't want to go back to Boston, we're like, well, now we got to win in Boston. So, I think we picked up really well, and clearly from the game, you can kind of tell that, you know, we did really well. We pretty much dominated the end of the game, the second and third period for sure.
Mm-hmm. Taylor, you mentioned the fans, and it's been an unbelievable year, right? Yeah. I mean, the sellout crowds, how does that feel for you guys to be there with so many people watching? It's just got to be an incredible experience, doesn't it?
Yeah, it's an incredible feeling, but it definitely feeds our ego, feeds, you know, our confidence. You know, this league has blown people out of the water already this year, and it's only been 1 year. I really don't think any other women's league or even a men's league at this point has done what we've done this year. That just, you know, puts more pressure on us in the future to have, you know, back-to-back-to-back seasons of the same show out and sell out arenas type of deal. But I don't have any thoughts that we won't. But, no, our fans in Minnesota have been great. And, you know, with the XL Energy is huge. You know, as much as we want to sell that out, we just want people to be able to come and watch us every single game. Because in other areas, say Toronto and Ottawa, their arenas aren't as big, and they do sell out because it's 3,000 to 6,000. But for us, we want it to be accessible. So if you want to come on a Wednesday afternoon or you want to come on a Sunday afternoon, you could have came to any game that you want, and there was a seat for you.
Mm-hmm. It was awesome. 13,000 plus, I believe, at Game 4 at the XL Energy Center.
Correct.
Taylor Heise joining us on the John Schuster Caldwell Banker Hotline. Taylor, you mentioned this just kind of briefly about you've been in those Game 5 scenarios. You were at the brink of elimination a number of times in the postseason, and even just to get into the postseason was difficult.
Yep.
Does that help? I mean, does having that experience of knowing what it's like to have your backs to the cliff behind you, you know, your heels on the edge, and to still try to fight and claw and scratch your way back in to win a game?
Yeah, we said it was April Fool's because our season could have been done six times since last month. Because you go into those games, like either that's a game five or a game three in Toronto when we were already down 0-2. or even just after losing to New York. Like, that was game seven of us losing in a row and, like, not even sure we were going to get into playoffs. But you got to look back on, we set ourselves up for success at the beginning of the year so that we were able to do that at the end. No one wants to lose seven games in a row or six, however many we lost, but all of those things that, you know, came together at the end of the season, that made us all stronger. We had like four games where we didn't score a goal. Like, you go through that, and then when the floodgates open, you know that, like, things can only get better. So, you know, for us in Toronto, to not only be picked by them, that they wanted to play us, obviously, because they thought they were going to beat us, and then to bring them to game five after being down 0-2 in reverse sweep, that was probably one of the best feelings. You know, there's rivalries in our league, no doubt, and I think that that was one of them for us. So, no doubt we'll have Boston as a rival next year, I'm sure. But, you know, it was just super fun to go through it with the girls because, you know, we've learned so much. But at the end of the day, playoff hockey, it's all of what you make it, and it's all about the work that you've put in prior. You're not going to get any better in those games. You just got to show up and use all the things that you've worked on in the past to help your team win.
Taylor, you were talking about the New York team. It's a strange thing that their home building, Long Island, Connecticut, New Jersey, all that type of thing. Is that something, do you think the league is going to get that fixed for next year as we get to that season?
Yeah, you just want, you know, the players and the fans to be able to get to their games in a timely fashion and to have anyone that wants to go to be able to go. So I think the league will, you know, we're going to iron out the things that didn't go as smoothly. I think our travel is definitely something that will be ironed out next year. As much as I love a morning wake up with my team, 3 a.m. was not fun multiple times this year after games. So, you know, I think we'll definitely iron out those little pockets of things that need to be fixed. But at the end of the day, you know, it's our investors and it's the people who have put the money down on the table and helped us to get to where we're at. A lot of them get to make a lot of decisions. So if they want a team in New York, we're going to have a team in New York. But we're just going to have to make it work. And I know those girls in New York, a lot of them, you know, they really loved where they were. It's just tough to not have a home arena. So for them, I think that that'll definitely be something that's ironed out.
Taylor Heise joining us in the John Schuster Caldwell Banker Hotline for the Minnesota PWHL franchise. Okay, Taylor, we had Ken Klee on last week, your head coach, and he would not give us any inkling as to what he thought the mascot was going to be next year. I'm looking to break some news here. If at least if you had a choice, what do you think the team would be called next year?
Right. Ken is just being PC, you know. Head coach can't give away too much. But, you know, Grace Zellmichael and I, my teammate, my best friend, we have been saying we want it to be the Purple Rain. And little do people know, I don't know if it's gotten out to everyone. We don't know anything about what's going on. We don't, as players, get to choose anything or be a part of it. But that's, if we could be called anything, tribute it to Prince, or the we're purple already. Put a crown on the front of the jersey and call it Purple Rain, R-E-I-G-N. I just think it's a good idea, so we'll see.
That's great. That's a really, really good one.
I love that.
Taylor, give it some thought to this.
I don't know if Taylor knows this. I went to Minneapolis Central with Prince, so this is very, very good to hear. I love that. I love everything about that. What would the logo look like? Did you say a crown, like a Prince, that type of crown?
I think it would be fun to have a crown on the front. So the Ontario Reign, which is LA Kings, AHL organization, they're the Reign, but they're not anything before it. And they have like a little crown and something on the front. So I'm not sure how trademark works, but honestly, I'm good with whatever. I just want to play hockey at the end of the day, but it would be nice to have a mascot and a name and a jersey that people can buy.
All right. There you heard it first. Hopefully it's the Purple Rain next year. Taylor, thank you for joining us. Thanks for a great, fun season. And I know I'm not alone when I say thank you for all that the players have done for women's sports. And I have a daughter who absolutely loved watching your games and thought it was inspiring to see women playing professional hockey at such a high level. And I know every one of you know that and what that role model role is like. So as a fan, we appreciate it. Thank you.
Thanks, Taylor.
Well, thank you so much. It's fans like you guys and everyone else that has to come up to support our league and everything like that that's helped us to raise off the ground and to have a great season. So we're excited to see what next year brings, and we'll see what we can come up with and see if we can keep Walter at home next year.
Awesome. Taylor Heise, awesome. Thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you.
Taylor Heise from the, well, maybe they'll be called the Purple Rain next year. I love that.
It, dude.
I'm not going to lie. That, I don't know if you could get better. We'll take a quick break, come back, and do the fast break. You're listening to WCCO.
All right, guys. Short show, short fast break. Only got a pair of questions for you today, one for each of you. I'd like your take on both of them. It's always NFL season nowadays, as we know. There is never a real off season for the NFL. There's always news going on. We are waiting on that Justin Jefferson contract, which hopefully is coming down the pipeline. I don't know. You're hearing things from both sides, and hopefully it's coming
now
soon.
Now that the Wolves were done, that's all we have to worry about.
Twins season. Come on now. We got Twins talk. We got Twins game coming up. But we got Vikings right now. The big news out of the NFL this week, not Vikings related, but Minnesota related. Olympic hero and Minnesotan and Golden Gopher Gable Steveson, the wrestler, signed a contract with the Buffalo Bills. Gable, mind you, never played organized football, never played for the Gophers, always a wrestler. He's 6'1", he's 275 pounds. The Bills obviously see maybe that athletic ability being able to transfer over into a new sport, maybe learn a spin move. I assume he's going to be on the defensive line. I don't know where else you'd put him. 6'1", 275, not the biggest defensive lineman in the world, but we'll see if that works out for him. So my question, of course, Pete, is it going to work out for him? Will he make the roster? Is this going to be a successful experiment for the Buffalo Bills?
It's a really good challenge, I think, and a challenge for Dan. I think the world of this kid. He's big, he's strong, he's got all the different things that you'd want out of a defensive tackle. But I'll tell you what, he's never played it. You know, it's amazing to me that that they gave him a shot. It's great. But when I look at all the guys from, you know, Olympian types, Bob Hayes and Curly Culp and all these various guys, Herschel Walker types, and Michael Carter was a shot putter. He was great. But they all played football at some point in their lives, and most of them played college football. So it sort of makes me wonder, does he have a legitimate shot? And I think he has a shot just because of the talent that he's got as a wrestler. And I think that actually is a huge thing that is the feather in his cap. But I think this is it's great show. People are going to love it. He's going to get talked about. It'll be on TV. I think he'll be on just about every one of those podcasts that are out there. But I don't know. It's very, very tough if you've never played the game.
Are you saying he's not going to make the roster, Pete?
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah, I'm with you. I mean, look, listen, last time I checked in the NFL, you can't, I'm playing on the defensive line, you can't grab a guy and put him in a full Nelson, right? I mean, like, that's just, it's a skill set that he has. Is he a freak athlete? 100%. I've watched him close up. He is agile. He is strong. He is quick. And he is absolutely unstoppable on the wrestling mat. Does that translate to football? Didn't work for Brock Lesnar.
And
Brock Lesnar probably wasn't as good as Gable Steveson was. I mean, he was very dominant, but he was bigger. He was stronger, and even he couldn't make it in the NFL.
I think he also had a football background. I think he played at some point.
Absolutely right. Yep. He also had a football background. So it's different. It's trying to reach for a guy's leg or whatever, trying to grab the – you can't grab the wrist. You can't hang on to him. You know, you can try to get him aside and shoot the gap. But those are skills that he doesn't have yet. Are they translatable? I don't know. I wasn't a good wrestler or a football player. I just look and I see all these guys who have played Division I at the highest level and still don't make it as a starter in the NFL. I find it really difficult to believe that never playing football in your life you could do it if you're Gable Steveson.
Yeah. By the way, real quick, I'll just add this. I did run into Barsh. I don't know if you guys remember that name, but he was a player from St. John's University who went down to Jacksonville, got drafted. Now he's with the 49ers. I'll tell you what. He is a really amazing. He's got the size. I think he's going to make that team. I think he's going to be at San Francisco for the next decade. He's a big, strong kid, and it's D3, you know. So yeah, he did well.
But at least it's football, and I mean, you know this. The difference between D3 and D1 is small in any sport. It's not. People do think that he's D3 or D1. When you come down to it. It's really all about speed, is what I've been told and what I've seen. It's that extra half second or whatever it takes in any sport to get the job done.
So, I mean, it's such big categories. The elite of D1, there is certainly those top teams in D1. That is where the real gap is. Those real top teams of D1 to everybody else.
And sometimes those D3 guys, it just took them time. I mean, I was talking to Barsh. Yep. He was 210 pounds when he got to St. John's. By the time he left, he was 340. I mean, he's drinking all these crazy shakes and everything. He wanted to be a tight end. He got bigger than a tight end, so they moved him to tackle. So, you know, it does happen later sometimes for those D3 guys, but there's a lot of them to get into the NFL.
Well, and speaking of size, Pete, and back to Gable on the Bills, he's pretty undersized for a defensive tackle there. 275 is, you're wanting a little bit more weight on that body. Not to say that he can't. 6'1", I think people have maybe said that's a generous 6'1". That's pretty undersized for that position. And I don't really know where else you would put an athlete like him. So, it'll be interesting to see if he surprises us all, power to him. I would love to see that.
Yep.
But, Charlie, I think he's 5'11".
Yeah, I think that's probably closer to reality. 5'11", 275 defensive tackle. That would be pretty unprecedented in the modern NFL, I would say, the way that those guys are now. Not to say it's impossible. Aaron Donald was a shorter guy, but, man, he was powerful. Over to you, Dave, the final question of the Fast Break today. We just had the great Taylor Heise on to talk about the Minnesota PWHL championship game, and it got me thinking of great athletes around the state of Minnesota and how we are being spoiled right now with a lot of really great athletes, a lot of really great young athletes. You got Anthony Edwards, you've got Kaprizov, you've got Justin Jefferson, you've got, you know, Buxton's still an incredible athlete. You've got all of these incredible athletes around Minnesota sports currently. A question for you, Dave, your current Mount Rushmore, your current four great Minnesota athletes that are on teams right now.
Okay. My current four. Okay. Hang on. Just give me a second here. I'm thinking about this. So Justin Jefferson is one of them. Anthony Edwards is another. That's two. I would put Brock Faber at number three. And honestly, probably Taylor Heise at number four. Even watching her, and I know we launched into this quite a bit, but the fact that she was effective in that game four, when they literally, I mean, you could tell Boston, everything they wanted to do was, they would literally had said, we're just going to take her out and let somebody else beat us. She was getting laid on. She was getting crashed. I mean, all sorts of stuff. But she stayed with it, and she eventually was a big factor in the game winner, which was called off. But I just think all of those athletes, to me, are players that when you hear, okay, that person made a play, you want to see it. Because they don't just make a play. They do something unbelievably exceptional. Whether it's just a Justin Jefferson catch, whether it's Anthony Edwards flying through the air for a dunk, whether it's Brock Faber, basically changing the way that the Wild do the power play by being kind of the lone defenseman on top so they can put more forwards down because he's so good at the top of the zone, or Taylor Heise. I just, they're all really fun players to watch right now, and I just don't, to me, that's the top four. To me, that's the ones I'd want to see all the time.
All right, Pete, who you got?
Of that four, do they have to be a Minnesota athlete playing in Minnesota?
I think, yes, let's keep it to that. Yes.
Oh, I got Antoine Winfield, I got all these guys.
Great Minnesota athletes around the country, but let's keep it in-house here. Let's keep it in-state for now.
All right, that's very fair. I think Justin Jefferson, absolutely. I think Anthony Edwards, you guys know I've been talking about him forever. I think it's something to be said about Naz Reid just because of the fact that he is – he's a sixth man, guys. He won the award.
I knew you were going to say it before you said it.
But then I'd actually go over to the women's hockey. I look at somebody like Taylor. I don't know how we can't just include them. They had an incredible season. They did everything right. They packed the stadiums. They've influenced so many people here in Minnesota, and it's not just women and girls. I think it's more than that. So I think for that reason, she belongs there as well.
Yeah, I think Nafisa Collier is knocking on the door.
If I could do an honorable mention, what's that?
I think Nafisa Collier is also knocking on the door there, right?
That was what I was. I usurped you.
I was waiting on it too. I thought one of you were going to say.
Okay, you get. I've had my mic time. It was your turn. I'm good.
I thought one of you were going to say it. Right. She's been incredible this year once again. Just a really, really great basketball player for a fun Lynx team once again. How about that rookie Pilly too, putting up some like 20 points in the other game in their last win. Looking like
fun
another
start to the season for them.
Another fun team at Lynx. That's all I got for
on the Stiles.
Go ahead.
I was going to say on the Stiles financial talk and text line, someone said, I wish Minnesota would have taken a chance on Gable. Wrestlers are so disciplined. I think he can study. It'll be fun to watch, says Teresa in Mantraville.
Mm-hmm.
I like that. I don't think he's going to play, but I like the idea.
Never know.
Take a break, come back. Is Royce Lewis's return pending? And if so, who are you going to send down? We'll talk about that coming up next. Understandably so, our audience is divided on what should happen with Karl Anthony Towns. We started the program talking about whether the Timberwolves should trade Karl Anthony Towns in the offseason on the StylesFinancial.com talk and text line. Let's see here. Cat is the Byron Buxton of the Timberwolves. I wouldn't go that far.
All right, guys, short show, short fast break. Only got a pair of questions for you today, one for each of you. I'd like your take on both of them. It's always NFL season nowadays, as we know. There is never a real off season for the NFL. There's always news going on. We are waiting on that Justin Jefferson contract, which hopefully is coming down the pipeline. I don't know. You're hearing things from both sides, and hopefully it's coming
now
soon.
Now that the Wolves were done, that's all we have to worry about.
Twins season. Come on now. We got Twins talk. We got a Twins game coming up. But we got Vikings right now. The big news out of the NFL this week, not Vikings related, but Minnesota related. Olympic hero and Minnesotan and Golden Gopher Gable Steveson, the wrestler, signed a contract with the Buffalo Bills. Gable, mind you, never played organized football, never played for the Gophers, always a wrestler. He's 6'1", he's 275 pounds. The Bills obviously see maybe that athletic ability being able to transfer over into a new sport, maybe learn a spin move. I assume he's going to be on the defensive line. I don't know where else you'd put him. 6'1", 275, not the biggest defensive lineman in the world, but we'll see if that works out for him. So my question, of course, Pete, is it going to work out for him? Will he make the roster? Is this going to be a successful experiment for the Buffalo Bills?
It's a really good challenge, I think, and a challenge for Dan. I think the world of this kid. He's big, he's strong, he's got all the different things that you'd want out of a defensive tackle. But I'll tell you what, he's never played it. You know, it's amazing to me that they gave him a shot. It's great. But when I look at all the guys from, you know, Olympian types, Bob Hayes and Curly Culp and all these various guys, Herschel Walker types, and Michael Carter was a shot putter. He was great. But they all played football at some point in their lives, and most of them played college football. So it sort of makes me wonder, does he have a legitimate shot? And I think he has a shot just because of the talent that he's got as a wrestler. And I think that actually is a huge thing that is the feather in his cap. But I think this is it's a great show. People are going to love it. He's going to get talked about. It'll be on TV. I think he'll be on just about every one of those podcasts that are out there. But I don't know. It's very, very tough if you've never played the game.
Are you saying he's not going to make the roster, Pete?
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah, I'm with you. I mean, look, listen, last time I checked in the NFL, you can't I'm playing on the defensive line. You can't grab a guy and put him in a full Nelson, right? I mean, like, it's a skill set that he has. Is he a freak athlete? 100%. I've watched him close up. He is agile. He is strong. He is quick. And he is absolutely unstoppable on the wrestling mat. Does that translate to football? Didn't work for Brock Lesnar.
And
Brock Lesnar probably wasn't as good as Gable Steveson was. I mean, he was very dominant, but he was bigger. He was stronger, and even he couldn't make it in the NFL.
I think he also had a football background. I think he played at some point.
He also did. Yeah. You're absolutely right.
Yep.
He also had a football background. So it's different. It's trying to reach for get a guy's leg or whatever, trying to grab the – you can't grab the wrist. You can't hang on to him. You know, you can try to get him aside and shoot the gap. But those are skills that he doesn't have yet. Are they translatable? I don't know. I wasn't a good wrestler or a football player. I just look and I see all these guys who have played Division I at the highest level and still don't make it as a starter in the NFL. I find it really difficult to believe that never playing football in your life, you could do it if you're Gable Steveson.
Yeah. By the way, real quick, I'll just add this. I did run into Barsh. I don't know if you guys remember that name, but he was a player from St. John's University who went down to Jacksonville, got drafted. Now he's with the 49ers. I'll tell you what. He is a really amazing. He's got the size. I think he's going to make that team. I think he's going to be at San Francisco for the next decade. He's a big, strong kid, and it's D3, you know. So yeah, he did well.
But at least it's football, and I mean, he's, you know, this football. The difference between D3 and D1 is small in any sport. It's not. People do think that, oh, he's D3 or D1. When you come down to it, It's really all about speed, is what I've been told and what I've seen. It's that extra half second or whatever it takes in any sport to get the job done.
So, I mean, it's such big categories. The elite of D1, there is certainly those top teams in D1. That is where the real gap is. Those real top teams of D1 to everybody else.
And sometimes those D3 guys, it just took them time. I mean, I was talking to Barsh. Yep. He was 210 pounds when he got to St. John's. By the time he left, he was 340. I mean, he's drinking all these crazy shakes and everything. He wanted to be a tight end. He got bigger than a tight end, so they moved him to tackle. So, you know, it does happen later sometimes for those D3 guys, but there's a lot of them to get into the NFL.
Well, and speaking of size, Pete, and back to Gable on the Bills, he's pretty undersized for a defensive tackle there. 275 is, you're wanting a little bit more weight on that body. Not to say that he can't. 6'1", I think people have maybe said that's a generous 6'1". That's pretty undersized for that position. And I don't really know where else you would put an athlete like him. So it'll be interesting to see if he surprises us all power to him. I would love to see that.
Yep.
But, Charlie, I think he's 5'11".
Yeah, I think that's probably closer to reality. 5'11", 275 defensive tackle. That would be pretty unprecedented in the modern NFL, I would say, the way that those guys are now. Not to say it's impossible. Aaron Donald was a shorter guy, but, man, he was powerful. Over to you, Dave, the final question of the Fast Break today. We just had the great Taylor Heise on to talk about the Minnesota PWHL championship game, and it got me thinking of great athletes around the state of Minnesota and how we are being spoiled right now with a lot of really great athletes, a lot of really great young athletes. You got Anthony Edwards, you've got Kaprizov, you've got Justin Jefferson, you've got, you know, Buxton's still an incredible athlete. You've got all of these incredible athletes around Minnesota sports currently. A question for you, Dave, your current Mount Rushmore, your current four great Minnesota athletes that are on teams right now.
Okay. My current four. Okay. Hang on. Just give me a second here. I'm thinking about this. So Justin Jefferson is one of them. Anthony Edwards is another. That's two. I would put Brock Faber at number three. And honestly, probably Taylor Heise at number four. Even watching her, and I know we launched into this quite a bit, but the fact that she was effective in that game four, when they literally, I mean, you could tell Boston, everything they wanted to do was, they would literally had said, we're just going to take her out and let somebody else beat us. She was getting laid on, she was getting crashed, I mean, all sorts of stuff, but she stayed with it, and she eventually was a big factor in the game winner, which was called off. But I just think all of those athletes, to me, are players that when you hear, okay, that person made a play, you want to see it. Because they don't just make a play. They do something unbelievably exceptional. Whether it's just a Justin Jefferson catch, whether it's Anthony Edwards flying through the air for a dunk, whether it's Brock Faber, basically changing the way that the Wild do the power play by being kind of the lone defenseman on top so they can put more forwards down because he's so good at the top of the zone, or Taylor Heise. They're all really fun players to watch right now, and I just don't. To me, that's the top four. To me, that's the ones I'd want to see all the time.
All right, Pete, who you got?
Of that four, do they have to be a Minnesota athlete playing in Minnesota?
I think yes. Let's keep it to that. Yes.
Oh, they're shoot. Great.
There are
I got Antoine Winfield. I got all these guys.
There are great Minnesota athletes around the country, but let's keep it in-house here. Let's keep it in-state for now.
All right. That's very fair. I think Justin Jefferson, absolutely. I think Anthony Edwards, you guys know I've been talking about him forever. I think it's something to be said about Naz Reid just because of the fact that he is – he's a sixth man, guys. He won the award.
I knew you were going to say it before you said it.
But then I'd actually go over to the women's hockey. I look at somebody like Taylor. I don't know how we can't just include them. They had an incredible season. They did everything right. They packed the stadiums. They've influenced so many people here in Minnesota, and it's not just women and girls. I think it's more than that. So I think for that reason, she belongs there as well.
Yeah, I think Nafisa Collier is knocking on the door.
If I could do an honorable mention, what's that?
I think Nafisa Collier is also knocking on the door there, right?
That was what I was. I usurped you.
I was waiting on it too. I thought one of you were going to say.
Okay, you get. I've had my mic time. It was your turn. I'm good.
I thought one of you were going to say it. Yeah, she's been incredible this year once again. Just a really, really great basketball player for a fun Lynx team once again. How about that rookie Pilly too, putting up some like 20 points in the other game in their last win. Looking like
fun
another
start to the season for them.
Another fun team at Lynx. That's all I got for
on these styles.
Go ahead.
I was going to say on the Styles Financial Talk and Text Line, someone said, I wish Minnesota would take a chance on Gable. Wrestlers are so disciplined. I think he can study. It'll be fun to watch, says Teresa in Mantraville.
Mm-hmm.
I like that. I don't think he's going to play, but I like the idea.
Never know.
Take a break. Come back. Is Royce Lewis's return pending? And if so, who are you going to send down? We'll talk about that coming up next. Understandably so, our audience is divided on what should happen with Karl Anthony Towns. We started the program talking about whether the Timberwolves should trade Karl Anthony Towns in the offseason on the StylesFinancial.com talk and text line. Let's see here. Cat is the Byron Buxton of the Timberwolves. I wouldn't go that far. When he is good, he is good. When he is bad, he is bad. But can he stay healthy? I mean, he's been injured a couple times, but that's why you have depth. And I do think, though, it's important to note that in the regular season, they were 14-6 without Cat. Regular season, just totally, you know, different scenarios. But I think that doesn't become the sole reason why you would trade him, but it all adds into the same. That you know, there's an argument there that they could be okay without him. Let's see. Going back to the text line here, I'm just trying to get these are like out of order. Okay. Naz unquestionably cannot replace Cat. He doesn't have the size or ability to back a defender to the hoop. Every time Naz drives, he loses the ball, which he did many times during the Mavs series. He doesn't have the physical presence of Cat. That's a fact. Cat drives me crazy, though, because he's a head case. He's good, he's good. When he's bad, he's bad.
When we're talking about physical, when we're talking about physical forwards, I do not think Karl Anthony Towns. He is not my definition of somebody that's gonna back you down and really muscle you in the paint. So I don't know how that's any different for Naz Reid. I don't see Naz as not being tough enough to get in. Neither
there.
Do I. But
he can get in there. He's tough. He's just a great 3-point shooter too.
He's at least got the same body type and way that Karl Anthony Towns plays. I mean, they're not neither of them are the most physical forwards, but they both can, I suppose. Karl Anthony Towns finishes going away from the basket every single bucket. Like, he cannot finish going to the bucket. So it's I don't love that comparison. I have come up with the trade, though. Did I tell you this, Dave?
Okay, let's hear it.
Lowry Markkanen is going to be a Timberwolf. I want him to be.
We're trading with Utah, correct?
Utah. Lowry Markkanen, Keontae George, and some picks going each way. We send Towns, Wendell Moore, Josh Minot, some of those smaller pieces. I love it. I think that's a great trade.
Does it save the Timberwolves money?
$30 million.
That's real money. Going back to Naz Reid for one second, that's part of the reason that I don't think he can just step in for Carl, because he's not the same size. They're neither one of them are monstrously physical, and I'd say Carl's less physical. But Naz is only 6'9", guys, so it's not like he's a 7-footer. And I know that's just a few inches, but those few inches I think do mean a lot. So he's a different kind of player for sure, and he shoots really well from the outside, so that's what he does. But we would lose a presence on the inside. Even though Carl's not as physical as I think a lot of people would like him to be at his size, I think we would be losing that height, which when you've got a 7-footer next to a guy who's, what, 7'1 or 7'2, I think that you're going to miss out on something like that. We kind of have that Twin Towers right now. And if we don't have Carl, all right, well, we need another tower.
I think you were talking about it there. The thing is, you got Rudy, the 7-foot plus guy already. Is it super necessary to have that second guy that be 7 foot, or can he be a 6'9" forward like Nas Reed? I lean towards the latter.
He can be. I'll answer that. It absolutely can be. Look at what Dallas did. I mean, their points. Yes, they had Luka, who is arguably the most annoying player ever to play in the NBA. But what they did well when Dallas was working well in the series, they were whipping the ball around the outside and just knocking down threes. I mean, and Luka's doing it too, and leaning into and getting a foul. By the way, I'm going to digress just a little bit.
We don't have time.
The foul.
Here it goes.
The foul that where he jumped into Karl Anthony Towns, and they called Karl Anthony Towns for a foul, might have been the worst call I have ever seen in NBA basketball. That was so bad. Tell me I'm wrong.
No, you're not wrong. You know, for whatever reason, it feels like Luka gets
everything.
He gets a lot of physical play. Like he really does. He doesn't get called for the fouls now. Is that because he's been around for a while? Or, you know, it's not been that long, but he's been around for a while. Why does he get the calls? He is getting calls. There's no doubt about that. And he's able to play physical in a game that nobody else gets to play at that same level. So I saw the same thing you saw, Dave. I was amazed.
Oh, I was so mad. I was yelling at the television. By the way, we're out early today at 11 because of the Twins taking on the Houston Astros today. That's down at Minute Maid Park in Houston. Royce Lewis, there's lots of talk that he's going to be back soon here from his opening day quad injury. If you believe that and it's coming down soon, the question now is you have to send someone back down to AAA, right, to make room for him. I don't, Charlie, you're more baseball than I am. I don't think it's Jose Miranda because I think he's been outstanding. Mm-hmm. I don't see Larnach or Kirilloff going back down. To me, the dart goes right into Eduardo Julian, who has not been great in the past couple of games, but I do think it over the stretch. I think he's the one that goes, don't you?
Yeah, that's definitely the prime candidate at this point. You're not, you know, Willie Castro's leading the team in average. There's nobody else that is performing at that level. Now, there's going to be up and downs with your Miranda's, Julian, just depending on how they're performing the rest of the season. But right now, just based on pure performance, what they need up at the major league level, I would be pretty dang surprised if it was anybody but Eduard Julian.
Are you guys go ahead. Go ahead.
No, you go ahead. I was going to toss it to you anyway. Go ahead.
I was just going to say this real quick. I have never seen a team, and this is going back for the last year or two, where I've never seen a team that's been more 500 in every single way than this team. I mean, you look at their record at home. They're 16-13. What are they away? 16-13. Runs scored, 256. Runs against, 251. Everywhere you look, they are just perfectly average. They're winning and loss. It's just amazing to me that we haven't been able to break out to some degree, because it seems like every once in a while the bats start to get on fire, we look great, and then we just revert back once again. And so it's been an amazing thing to watch this team. We're doing much better, though. We're getting the home runs. We're not getting as many strikeouts as we have been getting. But even that, we're still somewhere right there in the middle of MLB.
But you know why? And you've made this point before, and I agree with it. It comes down to consistency. It's never the same lineup, because guys, over the past couple of years, injuries get guys in and out. So I do think you're right. And I think consistency comes when you have the same guys in the lineup all the time that they just have not had. Mm-hmm. Again, Inside Twins coming up next. Twins and Astros coming at you right after that. We're out of here. See you next Sunday, everybody. Understandably so, our audience is divided on what should happen with Karl Anthony Towns. We started the program talking about whether the Timberwolves should trade Karl Anthony Towns in the offseason on the StylesFinancial.com talk and text line. Let's see here. Cat is the Byron Buxton of the Timberwolves. I wouldn't go that far. When he is good, he is good. When he is bad, he is bad. But can he stay healthy? He's been injured a couple times, but that's why you have depth. I do think, though, it's important to note that in the regular season, they were 14-6 without Cat. Regular season, just totally, you know, different scenarios. But I think that doesn't become the sole reason why you would trade him, but it all adds into the same. That you know, there's an argument there that they could be okay without him. Let's see. Going back to the text line here, I'm just trying to get these are like out of order. Okay. Nas unquestionably cannot replace Cat. He doesn't have the size or ability to back a defender to the hoop. Every time Nas drives, he loses the ball, which he did many times during the Mavs series. He doesn't have the physical presence of Cat. That's a fact. Cat drives me crazy, though, because he's a head case. he's good. When he's bad, he's bad.
When we're talking about physical, when we're talking about physical forwards, I do not think Karl Anthony Towns. He is not my definition of somebody that's gonna back you down and really muscle you in the paint. So I don't know how that's any different for Naz Reid. I don't see Naz as not being tough enough to get in there. Neither do I. But
he can get in there. He's tough. He's just a great 3-point shooter too.
He's at least got the same body type and way that Karl Anthony Towns plays. I mean, neither of them are the most physical forwards, but they both can, I suppose. Karl Anthony Towns finishes going away from the basket every single bucket. Like, he cannot finish going to the bucket. So I don't love that comparison. I have come up with the trade, though. Did I tell you this, Dave?
Okay, let's hear it.
Lowry Markkanen is going to be a Timberwolf. I want him to be.
We're trading with Utah, correct?
Utah. Lowry Markkanen, okay, Keontae George, and some picks going each way. We send Towns, send, you know, Wendell Moore, Josh Minot, some of those smaller pieces. I love it. I think that's a great trade.
Does it save the Timberwolves money?
$30 million.
That's real money. Going back to Naz Reid for 1 second, that's part of the reason that I don't think he can just step in for Carl, because he's not the same size. Neither one of them are monstrously physical, and I'd say Carl's less physical, but Naz is only 6'9", guys, so it's not like he's a 7-footer. And I know that's just a few inches, but those few inches, I think, do mean a lot. So he's a different kind of player, for sure. And he shoots really well from the outside, so that's what he does. But we would lose a presence on the inside. Even though Carl's not as physical as I think a lot of people would like him to be at his size, I think we would be losing that height, which when you've got a 7-footer next to a guy who's, 7'1 or 7'2, I think that you're going to miss out on something like that. We kind of have that Twin Towers right now, and if we don't have Carl, all right, well, we need another tower.
I think you were talking about it there. The thing is, you got Rudy, the 7-foot-plus guy already. Yeah. Is it super necessary to have that second guy that be 7 foot, or can he be a 6'9" forward like Naz Reid? I lean towards the latter.
He can be. I'll answer that. It absolutely can be. Look at what Dallas did. I mean, their points. Yes, they had Luka, who is arguably the most annoying player ever to play in the NBA. But what they did well when Dallas was working well in the series, they were whipping the ball around the outside and just knocking down threes. I mean, and Luka's doing it too, and leaning into and getting a foul. By the way, can I just – I'm going to digress just a little bit.
We don't have time.
The foul
– Here it goes.
The foul that – where he jumped into Karl Anthony Towns, and they called Karl Anthony Towns for a foul, might have been – the worst call I have ever seen in NBA basketball. That was so bad. Tell me I'm wrong.
No, you're not wrong. You know, for whatever reason, it feels like Luka gets
everything.
He gets a lot of physical play. Like he really does. He doesn't get called for the fouls now. Is that because he's been around for a while? Or, you know, it's not been that long, but he's been around for a while. Why does he get the calls? He is getting calls. There's no doubt about that. And he's able to play physical in a game that nobody else gets to play at that same level. So I saw the same thing you saw, Dave. I was amazed.
Oh, I was so mad. I was yelling at the television. By the way, we're out early today at 11 because of the Twins taking on the Houston Astros today. That's down at Minute Maid Park in Houston. Royce Lewis, there's lots of talk that he's going to be back soon here from his opening day quad injury. If you believe that and it's coming down soon, the question now is you have to send someone back down to AAA, right, mm-hmm. to make room for him. I don't, Charlie, you're more baseball than I am. I don't think it's Jose Miranda because I think he's been outstanding.
Mm-hmm.
I don't see Larnick or Kirilloff going back down. To me, the dart goes right into Eduardo Julian, who has not been great in the past couple of games, but I do think it over the stretch. I think he's the one that goes, don't you?
Yeah, that's definitely the prime candidate at this point. You're not, you know, Willie Castro's leading the team in average. There's nobody else that is performing at that level. Now, there's going to be up and downs with your Miranda's, Julian, just depending on how they're performing the rest of the season. But right now, just based on pure performance, what they need up at the major league level, I would be pretty dang surprised if it was anybody but Edward Julian.
Are you guys go ahead.
No, you go ahead. I was going to toss it to you anyway. Go ahead.
I was just going to say this real quick. I have never seen a team, and this is going back for the last year or two, where I've never seen a team that's been more 500 in every single way than this team. I mean, you look at their record at home. They're 16-13. What are they away? 16-13. Runs scored, mm-hmm. 256. Runs against, 251. Everywhere you look, they are just perfectly average. They're winning and loss. It's just amazing to me that we haven't been able to break out to some degree, because it seems like every once in a while the bats start to get on fire, we look great, and then we just revert back once again. And so it's been an amazing thing to watch this mm-hmm. team. We're doing much better, though. We're getting the home runs. We're not getting as many strikeouts as we have been getting. But even that, we're still somewhere right there in the middle of MLB.
But yeah. You know why? And you've made this point before, and I agree with it. It comes down to consistency. It's never the same lineup, because guys, over the past couple of years, injuries get guys in and out. So I do think you're right. And I think consistency comes when you have the same guys in the lineup all the time that they just have not had. Mm-hmm. Again, Inside Twins coming up next. Twins and Astros coming at you right after that. We're out of here. See you next Sunday, everybody.